This episode was recorded for my UK Column show. Please support UK Column by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
This is a very dark topic, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly can be. It certainly can be. And when I was trying to readjust our links, you know, that were broken since you had gone from TNT, I kept trying to Google your name and my name to see if I could come up with the links. And I found out all kinds of interesting things about you and I. And let's see, I'm a former public school teacher, which I'm not. And the name of my book is very different, and you're a provocateur.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it.
Okay.
Okay, so Debbie, what is your background?
My background is I'm just a mom who always loved reading. My parents lived near a library or had a business near a library when I was growing up, and I would go and I would read. And so most of the children's books that were common back then and before then, I was familiar with. So when my oldest child learned to read when he was 5, this has been about 40 years now, I started taking him to the library and I started taking home all of the new books with the shiny covers, not thinking anything about it, just trying to find things for him to read. And I noticed that there was quite a transition from the books that I had read as a child. So I was born wondering why instead of where. And so I started asking all those questions, and it's just kept me going for all of these years, wondering how they do this to kids, why they do this to kids. And I'm just still doing it, Jeremy. And
So the short story is, you have discovered over the last few decades that what kids are reading now, they really should not be reading.
Well, I mean, that's probably overly simplistic, okay? But there's an agenda. You know, when I first started, you saw maybe New Age things coming in and occultic things and a lot of sexuality in the 70s. And then, you know, I still run into parents after all of these years that don't even know that DAMN is in a book. Okay. And I know we've talked about this before. I have one Simon and Schuster Children's Publishing Division young adult book that has 1,338 F words, 900 and some other very cutting swear words. And I tell everybody, yes. And I tell everybody those 2,000 words in that book are the nicest part of the book. So you can use your imagination from there. I don't think we'll get into those descriptions today. But this is standard fare for kids' books. So what I've just said to you, I've just talked about deviant sexual practices and profanity. But those aren't the only issues. See, parents automatically assume that if you could remove all the sex and the profanity, that everything would be pure and holy. But that's not it. You can go back to board books. You have a baby now. You know what a board book is, right? Okay? And it starts in board books now, the indoctrination. But the indoctrination is twofold. It's not just starting to plant ideas in your infants and toddlers, it also influences the adult who's reading the book. You know, and I want to stop before we really get into this, and I want to bring up one thing that really, really, I think a point that needs to be made. You know, I know that your listeners come from all different points of view, but I think we can agree on one thing, and that is, if you know, I don't know who your politicians are, but let's just talk about in America. Okay, if you, let's go back to Biden. And let's say that there was a new book on Biden that came out. Well, if you are favorable to Biden, you might think it's a great book. If somebody is opposed to Biden's practices, then they might be very much against that book, right? And if you had them both on your program, they would be arguing it. Is that right? Would anybody say, would they, anybody write into your show and say, Jeremy, this is censorship? Nobody would call that censorship. You're having an argument of two different sides and two different opinions. The only place that is ever used is if you bring up a children's book. And if you bring up a children's book, automatically, at least here in America, you're a censor, you're a bigot, you're a fascist, you're a Nazi, you're a, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on and on forever. And that's how they try to get you not to be able to discuss and talk about what is actually in children's books.
What is in children's books?
Okay, well, I don't think I want to get into the actual descriptions of the sexuality. You can't even imagine. They have a thing now that everything has to be an authentic voice. Okay? So if I am a transgender, I can write a book about a transgender child. But if you're not a transgender, you're not an authentic voice. Right?
Right. So you can't write a book about gay people unless you're gay.
Well, that's what they're trying to get to, because whatever you write, they'll say, well, Jeremy's not authentic. Okay. And one of the things that I brought up in my book was Charles Dickens. You know, when he wrote about Little Nell in the old curiosity shop, there were, you know, it came out in segments in the paper. There were people lined up at the wharf in New York City waiting for the edition to see whether Little Nell lived or died. She was a 14-year-old girl, and you had that much traction. Dickens was not an authentic voice. He was not a 14-year-old girl. It was, he was a great writer, okay? And it doesn't, if you're an authentic voice, it doesn't mean you're going to be able to convey what Dickens conveyed in that story and many other authors before him.
But that was a long time ago.
Well, that was a long time ago. But today, let's say you're a Dickens. You wouldn't be qualified. The publisher wouldn't take you. If you were writing a book on a transgender child or this or that, you know, or the other thing, whatever the issue is, because you're not authentic.
Right, which is where the agenda is. That's where the agenda is, yes.
Yes, and so it becomes, I mean, it just becomes silly. You know, then you have to be the right color of transgender to write this one. Or, you know, I mean, it just never ends. And so, where are we going with this? So you want to ask, okay, what is really going on? Well, some of the issues that I want to bring up before I get into books for your child, okay, is audio sex for kids. Does that sound
audio
puzzling?
Sex. Did you say audio sex?
Audio sex. I did. I was waiting to see your expression. Yes. Okay. Because many of these books, you would actually expect to find those books in the back room of an adult bookstore. I mean, the type of scenes and things that are going on in young adult books, right? Okay. But now, in the United States anyway, in our public libraries, there are digital libraries also. And so, right here from home, I can enter my library card number and all kinds of books will come up that are available to me. All I have to do is enter my card number and they will pop up on my screen. But they're not just ebooks. Many of these are audio ebooks. Now, I thought, you know, just like when you're driving down the car, driving down the highway and you're listening to an audiobook because you've got a long drive and you know, and you want to learn about something. Okay, in those audiobooks, I was naive after probably 30 some years to sit there and think that all of the pervasive profanity, I thought maybe it wouldn't be in there. So I took Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist by David Levithan and Rachel Cohen, because I knew it had, I think it had a little less than 300 F words in it. But one page alone had 26 F words. So I downloaded the, I mean, you can't write a kid's book without the F this and the F that and the F the other thing. But anyway, so what I did was I downloaded from the library the audio ebook, and I went, you know, I forwarded it to where I knew it had the 26 words. Oh my goodness. And yes, they're spoken with great emphasis. Okay. Once that dawned on me that the F words were spoken, I realized the sex scenes are spoken too. Now, do you know how many men are steeped in porn and they call and pay for phone sex? Well, what these kids, all they have to do is to download that. And I mean, we're talking sick stuff, okay? All they have to do is backward and forward and backward and forward, and they could listen to it 20 times in a row if they wanted to.
Debbie, just hang on. What age group are we talking about here?
Okay, well, these are young adult books. I can't tell you. Yeah, these are young adult books. But I can't tell you that the five-year-old, I doubt a five-year-old's going to do this, but I can't tell you that they couldn't push the same button on the library card and download the same book instantly. You know, I've never seen a check on it that ever asked me my age. Okay, and your young adult is typically 9th through 12th grade. However, then after we cover this one, we could go into adult books for teens. If there isn't enough deviancy in young adult books, the American Library Association has an Alex Award, and they will take an adult book and they will deem it that it would appeal to 12 to 18 year olds. And I tell you what, some of those are not very, very pure. I have a whole chapter on that in my book. You know, just exposing what's in those books. So your question, you know, the question is why?
Mm.
Why? Why do you do this?
Just for a bit of context, what were kids reading 100 years ago?
Okay, that's a good question that I do deal with. They were reading basically classics. Okay, so you might have been reading Robinson Crusoe, Swiss Family Robinson. You might have been reading Sir Walter Scott. At the latter part of the 1800s, beginning in 1900s, they would have began reading Twain. They would have read Thackeray, Dickens. You know, those were the books they were reading. So in fact, when the serial books came into being, a lot of librarians wouldn't even put such as a Nancy Drew book on the shelf. Okay? And not because Nancy was promiscuous, not because they had bad language, but because the reading levels were so much lower than what the kids were capable of and what they were reading. So see, the Edward Stratemer Company Syndicate, they're the ones, he originally did The Rover Boys in 1885, and it eventually, that series sold 5 million copies. So you would come out with one book and the next book and the next book, just like Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys, which he created those two. Started Nancy Drew about 1927, Bobbsey Twins about 1904. But see, these were far beneath what these kids were capable of reading. So I'm not sitting here saying, oh, you should never let your kids read those. You know, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that you need to make sure that you are pushing them, that they do not stay at that level. It seems to me that they're creating a situation where your kids are staying at a very, very low reading level. See, they, you know, they quit teaching them phonics years ago. Now they're starting to bring it back some, you know, but they did that on purpose to dumb the kids down. Are you familiar with accelerated reader in South Africa? Because it is in many, many countries.
I've heard of it, yes.
Okay, this is where they level. Like, they might tell you, you know, you're on a fourth grade, third month reading level, okay? And so I've tracked this since 2013. And what I do is I take 9th to 12th grade interest levels, because they separate those. There's an interest level and a reading level. So I take 9th to 12th grade interest level, English only, fiction only. And I, every year, I find how many books are written for them on a first grade reading level all the way through 12th. It has never increased since 2013. There's only been 124 books that are written on a 9th to 12th grade reading level included on their site. Okay? Only 124. And in fact, 79% are fifth grade and below. Okay? If the reading levels really meant something.
Which says what to us?
Well, that's a low reading level. I mean, if you have to read, okay, let's say legal documents.
Okay, wait, let me make sure I'm following. Okay, so when you say low reading level, you're saying that, like, for example, the sentences are very simplistic and basic, when they could be more sophisticated and slightly more complex.
Okay, I'll give you an illustration. Okay. I took the New York Times best-selling list because some of those eventually appear on Accelerated Reader because I wanted to compare apples with apples. And so I did 18 books yesterday just because they were the ones that I could find on there. The highest one, these are the books that everyday people read, you know, the Colleen Hoover and the Rebecca Yarros and John Grisham and those type of people. Okay, the highest one that I found, not to say that there's not some that are higher, most of them were on a fifth grade level, but there was one that was a 7.6, I think, 7.6. So anyway, I went to the middle grade interest level and looked up seventh grade, seventh month, you know, a month harder than that. I looked up seventh month, eighth month, and ninth month. We're talking Black Beauty, Little Women, Through the Looking Glass, Five Little Peppers and How They Grew. Now, would you expect those to be adult books? Or you may be unfamiliar with, you know, Five Little Peppers or something and, you know, where you live. But these were basic books that we read when we were 10.
Today we get Run, Sally, Run.
Yes. Well, it's more complicated than that. Even the books that the adults are reading. You see adults reading one book after another. But what kind of a level is it?
And you're saying that that's deliberate?
Well, yes. Yes. By 1930, okay, see behind me this bookshelf? There's a huge bookshelf back there. Okay, and I've got hundreds of readers from the 1800s up to about 1960, okay? In the 1800s, these books were not word guessing. They had to actually learn to read phonetically, okay? And then they turned it, the progressives knew. They were trying to dumb the kids down. They didn't want the type of government that we had. And so they started introducing the word guessing, which is your run, Sally, run. They started teaching them by word shapes. I have books from the 50s where they've, the workbooks, where they have shapes. If you were writing mom, you would have a tall box and two short boxes. And this is how they would learn mom. I have three gin readers from the 50s, and the first reader has 22 words in it. One of the first words is airplane. By book three, you learn the word up. So do you want to sit there and think about that tonight? Is that reading or is that memorizing words? Rudolf Flesch wrote the book in 1955, Why Johnny Can't Read and What You Can Do About It. And he exposed that widespread. You know, when you're teaching a child the word fish, do you show him the picture over and over and over and over and over and have him trace the letters until he finally gets it? Or do you teach him the sounds of the word fish and teach him to blend it together? There's a difference. It's a huge difference. Okay, and somebody, you need to look up, Sam Blumenfeld is dead now, but there's still a lot of things online, and I think his book is free online about the new illiterates. That would, for anybody interested in that, that would be a wonderful thing to do. So anyway, you're limiting the child's information, okay? They can't read what they could read. So even your college's texts, many of them would be dumbed down now also.
This is what you categorize as controlled vocabulary.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's a controlled vocabulary. Now, if you go back, people here in the United States would be familiar with the Boxcar Children because they grew up with those. And Gertrude Chandler Warner only wrote the first 19. The others were written after she died. I have two of the books that are old, the, you know, original ones, maybe not original, but first printings. And they tell you flat out in there that they're using a controlled vocabulary. If you look at Dr. Seuss's book, if you look at The Cat in the Hat, it tells you right in the very back of the book, they have the 1957 version, they have a picture of the cat, and in his hat, he tells you that he was given the 223 words of the Basal Reader. And that's what he had to use to write the book. It was to make the kids familiar and to recognize those words. But in 1980 or 81, he did an interview with Arizona Magazine where he flat out told them that it was the worst thing that ever happened in this country is when they flipped from teaching reading to using Chinese pictographs. That's what he called it.
Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Theodore Gazelle. Mm-hmm.
He is one of my favorite book authors of all time. I've got his entire collection here, and I love his artwork, yeah. And I love his rhyming. But it's so sad what you're telling me.
It took him 9 months to write The Cat in the Hat. He was he was really upset doing this because he had to use these 223 words of the Basal Reader.
And that's why he drank so much.
To come up with the title. Pardon me?
Yeah, that's why he probably drank so much.
Maybe so. That would have driven me to drink. And I don't drink.
Yeah. You've spoken also about inconsistency between profanity and vulgarity. Is that correct?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Yes. I mean, they overlap some, but when the book I was telling you about that had 1,338 F-words and 900 and some of the other ones were very, very serious things for me to call you. Okay, they weren't your standard cuss words usually.
Which is vulgarity.
And they were very vulgar because the book was very, very vulgar. You know, it used to be when the sexuality came in, there would be, you know, they always go by your emotions. So they would have your little boy and your girl, and they would fall in love, and you'd have this emotional story. Okay, and then they would have regular sex. Now, that's not even a focus part of the story. You could be working in an animal shelter, okay? And all of a sudden, I mean, it isn't even part of a continuity of the story, but all of a sudden there's a cute girl working there too that day, so you all go in the bathroom and it'll give the details of how you did it. Okay, and you come out and the story just goes on, and that's the, you never hear about that girl again. You see, it's just, I don't know, the kids are just being bombarded with it.
And to add to what you're saying, you actually sometimes don't think about books. The first thing that comes to mind is, I don't know, Cartoon Network.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But let's flip down to the younger kids. I think, you know, the sex and the profanity, it's obvious, okay? But when you get to the little children, how do you indoctrinate them? And I brought one thing today, okay? I don't know if you read my new article that I just posted. I just posted an article the night before last, and it's on my website. My website's whatsinsidechildrensbooks.com, okay? And I wrote about one little 32-page picture book, okay? And this is for 3 to 6-year-olds. And it's Mommy's Going to March. Those children did not know what they're doing. They are not social justice activists or warriors. You know, they were going, maybe their mom didn't have a babysitter, so they were going with them to march. And one of them thought they were going to get hot dogs. One of them thought it was going to be a band and parade. They did not understand, but were using these children. So there are whole curriculums today that are teaching children how to use emotional words to get their way. Now, if your child was taught that, if your child was in a public school and taught that day after day after day, it's not just preparing him to be a social activist. I guarantee you he would be using those same tactics on you and your wife, okay? So why do they manipulate children to come to a certain conclusion, and how do they do it? The first way is, you know, through their pictures or their stories, they bond with the protagonist. The main thing is all of the facts are omitted. But the thing you have to observe as a parent is, what is their takeaway? If these aren't the ideas that you're trying to instill in your child, why are they developing these takeaways from reading these books? And it's the same type of takeaways. Now, one of the things that I want to show you and is, can you see this picture?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they try to make it out like this girl is a young girl. And it says on here that, so instead of carrying books to school, many girls carry sewing machines to work. Clara becomes a garment worker. This was about the 1909 shirtwaist makers factory strike, the strike in 1909, right? So did you see the picture of her carrying the sewing machine? You want to see the sewing machine? It's about 35 pounds. Okay? Okay? It didn't happen. In a garment factory, and I sew all the time, okay? But in a sewing factory, even back then, they had industrial machines. Mind you, if the kids had one of these, if the poor immigrant workers had one, they would have been sewing at home. And I don't want to go into this whole thing. There were industrial machines. You couldn't have 300 workers come dump all of those lids, okay, set up their machines, because you weren't so much as allowed to take a needle home, let alone the thread. So you would have to take all the thread off of your bobbin every single night, and you'd have to rewind it every morning on one of these machines if they had one, which they did not. But why did they do that? Because this book tries to make the kids think that all of these were young girls. The book is about Clara Lemlich. She was real. She was real. Okay? She had revolutionary ideas when she came to this country at the age of 17, and she was in her early 20s when all these things took place. But when you look at this book, you assume that all of these were young, young girls. And the thing that they say, they should have been in school. Well, maybe they should have, but most kids in 1909 didn't go past 8th grade. You see, but they omit all of these things, trying to bring an end takeaway to these kids. Another thing that's in here is they went on strike. And so the police arrested her 17 times and broke 6 of her ribs. Now, this book is for 4 to 8-year-olds. Do you want to read that to your son when he's 4 and tell him about the police broke 6 of his ribs? What kind of a children's editor would let something like that pass? Unless that was part of the message that you wanted to send, because there's numerous books on police brutality for kids. I've did whole articles on that.
20 years ago, all the teens were reading Harry Potter.
Yes.
I've never read Harry Potter, and I've never watched the movies.
I haven't read Harry Potter either, and you want to know why? Because there's zillion books out there, and everybody and their brother has their opinion on Harry Potter. Okay? So everybody has written everything. I do not need to take my time to be reading all the Harry Potter so that we can, you know, have a conversation on it, because you could find 100 people, you know, to do just that. Now, you know, I mean, from what I have read and what I have heard, it is not something that I would let my kids read, okay? Or my grandkids. Because I get to choose that.
Remember that whole 50 Shades of Grey thing came out, and that was for adults.
Yes. Yes. And that's pedophilia, really. I mean, the people that have analyzed that, there is, you know, the girl was younger than... you know, people like to talk about. But yes, the kids were reading that also. And, you know, but I will tell you, Jeremy, in the young adult realm, they are so, I'm just going to say terrible because it's my opinion. You know, somebody else thinks they're wonderful, fine. Obviously, there are people that think they're wonderful because do you know who one of the major audiences is of young adult books? That's women, 30s, 40s, 50s, that read those books. Then you have, I mean, you can specialize or emphasize in any part of this that you want. You have books that are just teacher-child sex, and they'll go into great detail. So maybe the end result is maybe it shouldn't have happened. But it's a step-by-step playbook of actually how to even groom the child if you're a teacher. Things that you wouldn't even think about. It's like, oh, that's how you do it. This is what you learn in kids' books.
So what is the role of the teacher?
Okay. Let's say when I was in school, long, long time ago, if we had to read a very long time ago, you know, I've been married forever. Okay. If you had to read a book, let's say you were going to read Huckleberry Finn, okay? Everybody had in the class had to read Huckleberry Finn. We were supposed to go down to the local bookstore and buy it, and they had very cheap copies. I remember paperbacks, and of course, 45 cents was worth a lot more then, but they were cheap editions, you know, smaller print, thinner pages, and all of that. If somebody couldn't afford one, it never came up. It was just people who had left books years before or whatever. Every child got the book and they read the same book. That rarely happens anymore. And where we have, you know, we wouldn't have a very long period of time to read one book before we were in the next book. And today, if they read anything at all, it might be the whole year. Okay? And so anyway, what they do now is Accelerated Reader allows you as the teacher, say you have over 100 students between your 7 or 8 classes today, right? So you're going to assign maybe a genre. Maybe you'll say, you know, I want everybody to read a mystery. I want everybody to read a biography, or I want, you know, whatever. And so the kids will go to the Accelerated Reader because there are tests right online. There's multiple choice questions. So they will read a book. The teacher is not familiar with the book. She doesn't have to write questions for it. She doesn't have to write discussion questions for it. She doesn't have to write a test for it, an objective or a subjective. They might do a book report, but you could get up there and say anything. And if I hadn't read the book, I don't know if that's in the book at all, right? And so then they take the little test and the grade goes exactly to the teacher. What did she have to know or do? Nothing. So if you read the books that I was talking about, say with all the profanity and the things like that, she wouldn't know that. So there's nothing going to be discussed. If you have an issue, and this is my problem, every time you come up with something that somebody in your audience might say is controversial, if you bring it up, they'll say, well, these things need to be discussed. Okay, well, maybe so. I don't disagree with that, but who in the world is discussing it with them? And does it matter whom it is? You see, do you really trust what your kids would get? I've even collected a lot of the discussion questions at the end of some of these books. And oh my goodness, just the discussion questions themselves could lead the kids in a direction you would never want them to go. So my thing is not sitting here and everybody calling me every week and saying, well, is this a good book? Is this a bad book? I don't do that. I did a whole chapter in my book addressing why I don't do that. My direction is that as a parent, you need to be looking at what your children are reading. You need to just open the cover, not look at, open the book, not just look at that cutesy cover. They might have a girl and a boy going at it on the cover. And, you know, who's going to buy that one? They might have the same book and have a girl with her dog in her bedroom and the next one. And who's going to buy that same copy for their grandkids? You see, we're screwed if you don't look. And I'm tired of the people where there needs to be a law. Well, there's already a zillion laws that you've probably already broken 10 of them before breakfast, okay? You know, how many laws do we want? When does it become my responsibility to go make a law to protect your children instead of your responsibility as a parent to guide that children in the way that you want that child to go? And does it matter? Or is it just a free-for-all?
Yeah, so basically just open the book before you let your child read it.
And Jeremy, this is not a condescending thing at all. Because, I've done this for so long and I can still miss lots of stuff. And I try to go through books very, very, very carefully. But you can take, a lot of these books are on YouTube. And you can listen to these picture books being read right on YouTube. And if you're not careful and don't ask yourself the right questions, you're going to kind of go along with some of this too until you step back and think about it. And another thing I try to get parents to do is try to forget everything you know. Okay, if you're reading, say, it's a little kid's book and it has a political issue in it, forget what your stance is on that. Try to look at it as the five-year-old or whatever the target age is. Okay, forget what you know. And at the end of after you read the story, I want you to ask yourself, okay, what do I think now? Because this becomes part of your worldview. Now you can go back and you can read the book with the eyes of the knowledge that you do have. Okay. But first, you have to realize that your child at 5 years old's takeaway is not the same. And I'm going to give you an illustration. You might laugh at this, but I have a very, very young granddaughter. And her mommy was teaching her about states and countries. And she's very young, okay? And she was trying to explain to her that Hawaii and Alaska aren't attached, but we own it too. So do you know what her perception was? Oh, Mama owns those too, you know, not understanding what Alaska and Hawaii are. Oh, those are Mama's too, you know. And you see, sometimes we have to stop and realize kids are kids. Let's let them be kids. They don't know what we know. They don't think what we think. And they're very, very easily manipulated and led. You know, let's go... a board book. They have board books about famous people. So there's one about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Love her or hate her. This is a board book for infants. You know, they chew on them, right? Your infants and toddlers. Okay, so how many words are in a little tiny board book? You open it up and there's a spread and it says, Ruth, the two-page spread. Ruth is strong. Okay. What do you learn about Ruth from that? And she's holding up the Supreme Court building, but it's leaning to the left. If you look at the picture, it is leaning to the left. Okay. But see, why? Ask yourself, Is that what you want to read to your son right now? I mean, what's he going to grasp from that, whether you love her or you don't? Why? Why? Why aren't you reading Pat the Bunny or something?
Yeah, so, I mean, what you're saying, Debbie, is that propaganda and ideology have taken control of kids' books.
Yes. And it's in an emotional level. I'm reading one right now that's a middle grade book, and it's over 400 pages. But you've got one chapter by the Jewish boy and one chapter by the Muslim girl. Okay, and you can imagine and so much propaganda. And nobody wants to address what is true and what isn't true. Some of these things are facts. Some of these aren't. And it makes a difference because your children are assuming it's all fact, and this becomes part of their worldview. I listened to a couple of weeks ago, you know how you have the little the journalists that go to all the rallies and they interview people. And they went to a pro-Palestinian rally, and there was a lesbian there, and he was asking her, you know, why she was there, and she was talking about, well, she was supporting, you know, all of this. And he said, well, what do you think about October 7th? She never heard of it. Okay? All I'm saying to you is, whatever your perspective, whatever your viewpoint, it isn't fair to omit all of the facts and then expect to have legitimate conclusions. And even if you go back into Roald Dahl, okay, it's British. He talks about a nappy. Okay, so now there was the big hullabaloo about that a couple of years ago, you know, of changing all of that. When we read classics, you didn't change. If you didn't understand what something was in that time period, for heaven's sakes, you looked it up.
I was talking to somebody about the World Trade Center, 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I wrote, I wrote it down, but I spelt it. So South Africa comes from the Commonwealth. So we've got a British yes. Way of spelling. Mm-hmm. So I spelt center, C-E-N-T-R-E. And this person yes. said, that's a typo. You must spell it C-E-N-T-E-R.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I said, but hold on. They don't understand that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, it's obvious that different parts of the world spell differently the same right. word.
But we understood that when we were very young. One of the first words we probably would have understood would have been color.
You know, yes. Where you're still O-U-R. The O-U-R. Mm.
And we are not. And I mean, and you understood that there were those differences. But I do want to make one point. Today, one of the main things that you hear is, well, Jeremy, this is my truth. You know?
And yes, I've heard that.
Well, how many are there?
No, you know, I want to punch the wall.
You know, and if everybody has their own truth and they're all opposing to each other, then what we've just said is there is no truth. You see, and it just gets tiresome. Facts don't matter anymore. These kids are channeled into an emotional level, and you could spend the rest of your life making one page of facts to teach somebody on something. And you can show them all of that. And they're going to tell you, well, that's not what I believe.
The underlying theme of what you're telling me is that kids have become, in many ways, less literate, and that's by design. And not just that, yes. they are being fed
yes.
From a young age through books. Yes. Yes. Certain ideological and emotional perspectives on things right mm-hmm. under our noses.
Yes. But it isn't just the books. I don't ever want to act like, you know, books are the end all of everything. The same messages that are in the books are in your Cartoon Network. They're in the curricula at school. They're in your social media. They're in the movies, the videos, the DVDs. You know, the whole bit, it's just reinforced. It's systematic. It's line upon line, precept upon precept. you know, and we have to watch. You know, you know who Harari is, you know, who was one.
Yuval from the World Economic Forum.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, he writes kids' books now. Okay, I'm sorry. You know, I did like three interviews on that. You know, the first book, I mean, you can't imagine. And it's a series of four. The third one will be coming out in March. And I have read the first two. They're called Unstoppable Us. So, okay, we're going to go back to omission. Okay, you read those little books. Then ask yourself, what's your child's takeaway? Now I want you to go and read some of his adult works. And then you're going to realize for the first time what was omitted. What was he not telling the children to get them to that point? Is he doesn't talk about the useless eaters and what are we going to decide to do with them? Are we going to annihilate them? Are we going to entertain them? Are we going to drug them? He doesn't say those things in the kids' books. What does he say? He says that we were channeled our whole life through stories. Okay, so he makes a mockery of God. You know, he teaches them about corporations. You know, you get to the end all that, you know, kids are going to have to, you know, rise up and they're going to have to do this and that, and we're going to have to disregard everything that we have ever learned. But his story, he says this over and over and over, his story is a true one. Okay? So he's presenting this story. I mean, it's over 100 pages, 200 pages, something like that. Okay? And he emphasizes all the way through it that what he is saying is a true story. You know, and of course, nothing that Harari believes is in that book. I mean, the stuff that he's proclaiming to Klaus Schwab or any of these other people, that doesn't show up. Linda Sarsour, okay, she wrote an adult book, okay, about the Women's March and the whole bit. But Simon & Schuster, they have an imprint of Muslim character books called Salam Reads. And they took that book and modified it down to a child's book for, I think it's kids maybe 8 to 12. Well, there's a great deal. If you read both of them, there's a lot omitted. Does it matter? If I'm a trans child and I decide, oh, mommy, you know, I'm really a boy and I need to have hormone blockers right now. Okay, so the whole book will say how desperate I am and how people were making fun of me and I've always known that I was a boy or whatever. And finally, my dad will give in and he'll allow me to go and to get the hormone blockers. Not once in that book does it ever tell you that there might be a problem later from taking those. See, all of that is omitted to get you, by omission to get you to the point of, yes, of course, this is what we have to do. And then they always use the line, would you rather have a dead daughter or a live son? That's what they always do with the parents, and it's in every book.
It seems obvious to me that this is all feeding the transhumanist agenda.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You have the little books for toddlers that you are, you know, you're a boy, a girl, or a neither. You know, you have all of these non-binary books. You're not allowed to say now they've stopped this being bisexual, because if you're bisexual, you just said there was two genders. So now you have to be pansexual. You're thinking about that one, aren't you?
Yes. And I've seen some of these books. I've seen some of these books. Yeah. And it blows my mind. So which then brings me to the next question, and that is, as a parent, what must I be aware of? What must I be doing?
Well, you need to be reading some of these. You know, take whatever the age group your child is, just go online and find out maybe the top 10 recommended, and you read them. You read them, okay? You read them first. Maybe you'll like some of them. Maybe you'll start seeing the patterns, because the books that are being pushed are typically the ones that are promoting the agenda. You know, another thing, when we were a kid and you read a book, your mom might have read that same book. You know, your grandmother might have read that same book. Now it's, they publish so many books that you might have a book on a shelf for a year or two. It's gone and replaced with seven, you know, worse than that one. The books just come and go. You're dumping all this money into the libraries and those books are just being dumped. Nobody even wants to read them, actually. I mean, they're just so redundant on the message. If you sit there and you complain about the books that have overtly homosexual sex in them, then people will say you're a homophobe. But the same people would be objecting if it was heterosexual. You know, is that what you need in kids' books? And it's such a low reading level. You can't go to college texts and read those. If I read, this happened to me years and years ago, I would read maybe 30 juvenile books in a week, okay? Because they don't take very long at all, a juvenile book. And so I would read those. And after you've read so many of them, or the young adult books, and you try to focus, like I'm a Dickens fan, you try to focus on it, you'll find you're reading the same sentence four times before you retrain your mind that you have to pay attention to what you're reading. Your words matter.
So from tonight, I think I'm going to start reading Lord of the Rings to my child.
Well, I don't think that they're going to understand a lot of that. I think that there's still a lot of children's classics that your child might be really excited about. Okay,
but I mean,
but you can when the child is just a little bit older, you start reading them older material because you define things. You know, if you even take Little House on the Prairie, there's a lot of things that they don't understand in there, and you explain it to them. It's a bonding time with your child.
And Bible stories, actually.
Vocabulary. Pardon me?
And Bible stories. They have a moral.
Yes. 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 But I don't look at them as stories.
No, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah, I do know what you mean. I know what you mean. And you know what I mean.
So the moral of the story is go through everything first.
Yes. And that's not easy to do. But if your children are young, you have an advantage. You know, I suggest to young parents, go to a library and sit down. Just give yourself 2 hours one day. Go to the picture book section and just pull out everything that seems cute to you. They take about 5 minutes to read. Sit down, and if you really, really like one, okay, write down the name and buy it yourself and start creating your library. But you've got time to start then buying the next level, the juvenile books. You've got time to start reading those, and you need to do that. It takes a lot of time, but do you want me telling your children what they can read and what they can't read? Or do you want to do it as a parent? You see? So the ball is in the parents' court.
Yes, which then leads me to asking about schools. I mean, public schools have become sort of propaganda camps.
They always work. And I said, I don't know why anybody's in there trying to fix them. They're not broken. They're not broken. They've done exactly what they set out to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For real. Yeah. And so what are you going to fix? You see?
So what, private and homeschooling then?
Yes, really. You know, and there's a difference. You know, homeschooling, it takes a lot of discipline. And, you know, and it's not easy. And you have to sacrifice other things to be able to do that and to keep up and to guide them where you want them to go. But do you want them to be indoctrinated? You know, if if I take your little boy and I have him in school and I go 2 + 2 = 3, 2 + 2 = 3, 2 + 2 = 3, 2 + 2 = 3, 2 + 2 = 3, you know, and I do this all week, and then finally you have him at home and he's telling you 2 + 2 = 3, now you have to sit there and try to undo that. How many hours is it going to take you to undo it? You know, so, you know, it's a matter of what you want for your child as a parent. If you want them to be the global citizen that they're trying to develop, send them in there because they're going to fit right in. If you don't, you've got to make some other decisions.
All right, Debbie, how can my audience follow your work? I know that your book is currently out of print.
Yes. Yes, but they can go to my website. I have gone through where I haven't posted for a long time, but I did post the other night. It's taken a long time with this adjustment moving. But go to my website. Just reading a lot of the articles will just give them an idea of what is out there and what they need to look for. That's the important thing. There's always going to be the next book that's worse than that one. And that's not my game, to sit here and find the next one that's worse than this one. It's to find the patterns of how they are doing this to their children. And more importantly, what are they doing? Where are they leading them? If all of these books force your child to end up at the same place, we have a problem.
What's your website again?
whatsinsidechildrensbooks.com.
whatsinsidechildrensbooks.com. Well, on that note, Deborah DeGroff, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Well, thank you for having me. I always enjoy being on with you because it's more like two friends having a conversation.